talk to us about a community-based participatory project she's been working on.
So, thank you, and I'm glad to be here today. So, the Prevention Research Center is one of 37 Prevention Research Centers funded and supported by CDC. So, I acknowledge the funding support of CDC. So, today I'm going to talk about HIV-RAP, which was the second in a sequence of five-year funded community-based participatory research grants conducted by our PRC. The first was a study that focused on HIV/AIDS prevention among self-identifying heterosexual African-American women. And one of the major recommendations from the participants of that first study was that they felt that there needed to be an intervention developed that addressed conjointly men and women in terms of prevention. And the emphasis was on not discordant couples, but men and women together learning how to talk to each other, thus the acronym RAP, HIV-RAP, a community academic partnership to develop coeducational gender and culture-sensitive intervention. Long, long title in terms of what we're talking about today. But it's important to kind of set the groundwork there in terms of the direction that we were targeting. So I don't have any not good relationships to disclose. I'm not collecting any money. And for those of us who are in research, you probably realize that there's not a whole lot of money to collect anyway. So in terms of what I would like to focus on today for our objectives, and it was a challenge for me to put 5 years of research into what originally was 15 minutes, so I'm glad, well, I'm not really glad that one person decided that they weren't presenting, but it gave us all of us a little more time. So one of the objectives is to be able to list at least three key initial steps to community development of a CBPR. And I emphasize community-based participatory research community academic partnership, because there's a whole continuum in terms of research that is community-based, community participation, which is not necessarily based, community engagement. So, well, obviously, I teach a class in translational research that goes the whole continuum of what that means. So what HIV-RAP is a pure, I'll call it that, component of community-based participatory research that encompasses all of those components. So in order as well to be able to describe at least three measurable domains of a coeducational culture and gender-focused intervention, again, focusing on culture as well as gender, that had results that identified significant reduction in identified areas of HIV risk reduction among African-American men and women. So what is CBPR? So it took almost a year for the then 25 PRCs to agree on a collaborative definition, because there's so much diversity among communities across the nation. So this Kellogg Foundation definition was one that was finally agreed upon, where it left some flexibility for the community-based participatory research that was being conducted across the nation. So it's a collaborative approach to research that equitably, so the partnership should be equal, and partnerships primarily identified as academic and community. And then within community, there's a wide variety of categories as well. focuses on strengths as opposed to the deficit perspective. And CBPR brings research that is of importance to the complete partnership. And it's also important to the community, where historically, I'm sure we're all aware that often we as academicians have a theory, an idea that we think is important, and quite often it is, but it may not be the primary interest of the community. So it's important for CBPR research to be important, equally important to the community as it is to the academic partnerships. So there's knowledge to be gained, action, positive action to be learned, and hopefully outcomes that will ultimately eliminate health disparities. So it's important for us to know why a study is needed, not only from the academic perspective, but from the community perspective. And problem identification is often an area that may be glossed over initially. Community members may approach researchers, or more often it's the researchers who approach the community, unless there's a historical development of a community academic partnership, which in the case of Morehouse School of Medicine, the partnership was in place prior to the research that we conducted, and it's a little over 25 years now where there's been a strong community academic partnership between Morehouse and varying communities across metropolitan Atlanta. So the Morehouse School of Medicine Prevention Research Center, in collaboration with its community coalition board — I emphasize coalition because you often hear the term CAB, Community Advisory Board. Our community coalition board sets policy for our Prevention Research Center. They have the right to refuse research which may be brought to them in terms of community. And in my now 15 years or so with the PRC, that's happened, not a lot, but it has happened, for reasons where the community felt it was not in their best interest, that they were being used, and that the benefit to the community was not necessarily one that they thought was viable enough for them to engage. So that it wasn't like the term helicopter research, where the helicopter hovers over the community, siphons the information out, and gone, never more to return. So our community coalition board focuses on sustainability, increase in resources for their communities, not only in terms of research perspectives and behavior change and reducing health disparities, but also helping them to develop the capacity to conduct their own research and to develop partnerships within the communities. So there was a joint collaborative effort to do a needs assessment, and HIV/AIDS was identified as one of the priority areas for risk reduction. So the Community Coalition Board documented its support and charge the Prevention Research Center to go forth, find funding resources to do CBPR research on HIV/AIDS within their communities. So just a little bit of background. African Americans represented 50% of the persons diagnosed with HIV, and this is across all areas. And that was data as of 2009. Also, 20% and 87% of African American males and females, respectively, were diagnosed with HIV attributed to heterosexual contact. And 65% of the persons in 2008 living with HIV or AIDS in Georgia lived in metropolitan Atlanta. So narrowing that picture down to the primary community partnerships for Morehouse School of Medicine, The Community Coalition Board needed to know more specific information to their geographic targeted communities. So, also in that perspective, there are few, I say few, although our graduate students didn't find any, and I hope that if you know some current ones, you'll let me know, that were gender and culture sensitive to HIV coeducational. Again, not discordant couples, but men and women in a community coming together to talk about HIV prevention, that target African-American men and women. And therefore, we developed HIV RAP, HIV/AIDS Risk Reduction Among Heterosexually Active African-American Men and Women, a Risk Reduction Prevention Intervention. And the visuals that you see here were those that were actually selected by the community. There were four options in terms of how to present the project visually, and this was the one that was selected by the majority. And you see Umoja, which is one of the Nguzu Saba principles, meaning unity. So the focus was on unifying the community, men and women within the community, in terms of reducing HIV/AIDS. So it's important to know your community. Don't go thinking you know everything and then design the research project based on what you think you know as a researcher. It's important to know more about the demographics. So we conducted a demographic surveillance. It took about a year to do it effectively, and Dr. John Wingfield was one of the lead persons, and he's in the audience as well, who helped to conduct this demographic surveillance. So it requires a healthy community for success, so you have to identify what the health needs are. The sustained efforts of diverse civic and community organizations, as well as individuals within the community, and individuals who live and work in those communities. We often don't live in the communities that we conduct research on. That's okay, but it's important that you have a partnership with persons who do live and work in the community so you get a realistic perspective of what the needs are. It's essential that you have prevention surveillance functions that assess health needs and identify the needs that are prioritized by the communities. So methods that you may use, and you may use others beyond these that are listed, but these were the ones that we primarily used in our needs assessment. So we accessed state, county, city, regional data, develop relationships with those agencies and institutions that provided the data for us from a more broader perspective. We also used federal data. We did windshield tours, and you may know what windshield tours are. For us, it's getting in the car and sometimes walking as well, but primarily getting in the car and driving these geographic areas so you know what they look like. You get a sense of the feel of the communities. You have an opportunity to stop if you can to talk with people who are there within the community. So you get an on-the-ground rather than a helicopter perspective of the communities in which you're working. And also in interviewing key informants. So what you have here is a map of 14 zip codes that were identified in metropolitan Atlanta that our criteria that we were looking for was at least 50% percentage of residents who were African American, and that based on the data that we had collected in the demographic surveillance had a fairly high, and that's not a scientific term, but I'll use it anyway, a fairly high incidence of HIV or AIDS. So we often use this map as a shock effect in a sense, because sometimes folks are in denial. about their susceptibility, vulnerability to HIV/AIDS infection. So one of the questions that I would ask when I put this map up to groups across metropolitan Atlanta was, do you see your zip code? And I'd hear suck in of breath sometimes, or expressions on faces. So the message was that we are all potentially vulnerable if we are not conscious about our behaviors in terms of HIV/AIDS prevention. So these geographic areas served as the areas that we focused on for participant recruitment. And it includes primarily Fulton County, City of Atlanta, with three counties that were part of DeKalb County, which is the county that is right next to Fulton County. So in terms of analysis of the data, we initially rank ordered. Our biostatistician recommended that we do rates per 1,000, which brought it down even more specifically by zip code. So we found that looking at the number of cases, the percentage of black population, the educational attainment, one being high education attainment and 14 being the lowest, looking at the per capita income and the poverty level income, we found that poverty level was statistically significant in determining the potential for HIV and AIDS. So that you see in that far right-hand column that number one, high poverty level was in fact number one in terms of the rate per 1,000. If you go to the next column to the left, you'll see that per capita is all over the place. So most often you hear the general comments from communities as well as some professionals that in terms of specifically looking at African Americans, that education and income are the factors that we look at. But with this population, it's poverty, not just income, because in some of those areas where the percentages were fairly high, there was high educational level as well. So there are other factors involving risk reduction among the African American population. So in terms of the study development, it's important to engage the community. If you're going to have a successful study, you must engage the community. And the community must be engaged with the academic institution as well. So it must be prevention focused. At the time that we started this research, our chairman of the coalition board was a senior person in the community, and now she has just celebrated her 99th birthday. She kept me breathless trying to keep up with her. So her common question was, what benefit is this prevention going to have in terms of bringing it back to the community? So if you've got true CBPR, it has to be able to be translated and effectively applied within the community, which includes being population-centered. A strong partnership with community members, within community members. The community-based organizations didn't always know each other, so we as a collaborative help to foster that and cross-pollinate the resources within the community. Must be multidisciplinary, and you must reach the participants where they live and work. Don't have it on the academic campus if you're doing an intervention. It must be within the community in hours and times and places that are of interest and convenient to the participants. We recruited in, well, I'll talk about that in another slide in terms of where and how we recruited. So HIV RAP focus was to design and test an intervention that would be effective among African American men and women and to develop and implement a coeducational risk reduction model. Part of that was the development of a questionnaire, and we pilot tested the questionnaire that has 8 domains addressing identified risk potentials and areas that affect HIV/AIDS prevention. So the criteria for participants were self-identifying a heterosexual, and as we went forward in the research, there were persons within the group who once they began to feel comfortable in the interactions, identified themselves either as bisexual or homosexual, and that was just fine because the direction of the intervention it incorporated a number of areas that persons could individually apply to themselves. Self-identifying as African American, now that's a nomenclature that has many interpretations. Black means different in a lot of ways as well. And within the African American community, we have had data collected identifying people as black, identifying people as African American, and we in our study understood the diversity. Africans who were now citizens, who were not born in the United States, who identified themselves as African American, Caribbean blacks who identified themselves as African American, and our whole diaspora. So it's important, and we did address those kinds of ethnic and racial differences in our intervention so that people were aware that one size does not fit all. And that's another study a presentation that I have, literally, in terms of one size does not fit all for African Americans. Male or female, ages 18 to 44, and residing in one of the 14 areas. Our study was popular to the extent that we had creative ways of people modifying their birth dates to fit within the 18 to 44 years, and also modifying their addresses. So it's not often in our communities, where our communities there in metropolitan Atlanta, where there was a study that people were trying to get into whether they fit the criteria or not. So we had the positive activity of trying to make sure that we had as clean a study as possible, clean, quote unquote, and meeting the criteria. So these were the 8 study domains. Sexual behavior, which was reported, all of this was reported within the questionnaire that we developed and pilot tested for reliability with scores ranging between 0.72 and 0.84 in terms of reliability and looking for these domains. Sexual behavior, condom beliefs and behavior intentions, HIV risk knowledge, personal perceived risk of personal partners, substance use behavior, safer sex peer norms, and conversations with sexual partners about condoms and HIV. So from the contextual framework, it was an Afrocentric perspective, and I've had persons to say, well, you misspelled that. It should be Afrocentric. No, this is specifically an Afrocentric perspective that was developed by Noel Braithwaite. And it's African-centered, and it incorporates Nguzu Saba principles, which some interpretation can be called Kwanzaa. However, that's a Christmas-focused acknowledgement. Nguzu Saba has the same 7 principles, but they're more specifically focused on prevention and positive focuses within the African or of African heritage area. Unity, community-based, community-supported, faith, economic collaboration, and so forth. The N2 principle is one that is a Bantu concept that supports the concept that African and African American communities are jointly focused and collaborative in terms of design and goals. The Afrocentric imagery is extremely important. You've seen some of it in the presentation. The intervention itself focused on culture and gender issues, group collaboration, group discussions, and were led by one male, one female partnering co-facilitators. So, theory of gender and power, which is predominantly more focused on a more traditional perspective of relationships. So, but that focus historically has been with men having more power in relationships than women. We had very rich discussions about relationships, men and women power focus for African American men and women. So moving quickly, these are the titles of the seven sessions of the intervention. They were two-hour sessions, again, conducted by one male, one female co-facilitator. And the last one, Celebration of Love and Unity, was not a group feel-good activity, but it was a way of bringing to not closure, but moving into the future of establishing support within the communities and for persons having support groups and support from family, friends, for continuing the effort toward HIV/AIDS and prevention. So recruitment. Engage partners in our recruitment, personalized recruitment materials. We use newspapers, cable TV, and often they recommended that the populations within those geographic areas would best respond to a visual that they wanted to work with us in developing. So we partnered in that. Study conducted in the community. And you see the persons there, the organizations that participated, and where. Malls, word of mouth, YMCA, organizations in the community, neighborhood meetings, et cetera. So some of the findings here, we had significant findings and change of sexual behavior. This is control versus intervention group, pre-post intervention with the survey being the information gathering. Condom barrier beliefs, 0.07, HIV risk knowledge, and conversations. Often we found that the persons did not know how to positively and effectively engage in communication and conversations about sexuality, sexual preferences, methods, safer sex, peer norms, and we were very pleased to have such significant results in that area. And we created environments in the sessions that helped people to feel comfortable about discussing sexual. So areas of dissemination, as you see there, multiple areas, multiple types. And of course, we as researchers have to publish. We have to publish or perish. However, the communities were saying to us, we're not likely going to read your publications. Mm-hmm. So you need to get this information disseminated to us in ways that we can use it and can identify with it. So you see some of the things that we listed there. And we've now been accepted for this component that I'm talking about in terms of the American Journal of Health Behavior. But it's important for an academic community partnership for this discussion to come and happen up front in terms of how you address it. So my concluding questions, because we all potentially are at risk. Yes, we may do research, we may do prevention, we may do clinical work, but we're all individuals, we're all part of various communities. So I challenge you to ask yourself these three things. What three things did you learn from this session? Or maybe one, or maybe none, but what did you think about the session from your own personal perspective? How can you apply what you have learned to your own personal life? And equally as important, how you can share that with others in your communities, whether it's your professional or your personal community. So references, and this is where you can contact me if you want to.
Thank you.
Question?
Yeah, we can take one question, I think.
So, question.
Or comment.
Comment, yes.
I have a question. I'm working at the French Minister's Center also, and I noticed my friend the results, after you found your results, and then the discussion about studying the results. And I was wondering if there was ever a time that you sort of disclosed the results you found to your community partners initially first, or, you know, ask them to.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I don't know whether you heard anything in the discussion, but I'm a clinician first. And then retired, took an early retirement, and came into research. So my passion is that of direct interaction. So throughout this study, we gave information in collaboration, the community coalition board with the communities. We had health fairs, we had town hall meetings, we had information that we disseminated. We, in the process of the intervention, also disseminated, because we developed a facilitator manual and a participant manual. So the participant manual went home with the participants. So this had a lot of information in it as well. So, yes, to your question, across the board, we disseminated throughout the process. And the findings, statistical findings, which actually tended to mean less to the community than it did to an academic institution, we had continual requests for how can we get this intervention, can you do train the trainer, and that kind of thing.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.